This podcast is brought to you by Resilient Fightwear, the best brand on the fight game. That's all I need to say. They have the most amazing Muay Thai shorts ever. They have the most amazing designs. They're comfortable, durable, amazing, beautiful. They have the softest t-shirts you will ever see, and they will make you look strong as fuck. Also, they have the best fucking hoodies I ever tried, and I'm a fucking hoodie connoisseur. Please go check them out. Get some of their amazing gloves. They look amazing. Also, get in touch with our homies from Sponsor the Fighters. If you're a fighter, go there. They will get you on the fighter listing and they will help you find the sponsors you need. And if you're a fight gear brand, if you're a supplement brand, if you're a hand wrap brand or whatever, they will help you get fighters to sponsor. They will make your brand grow a shit ton. Also, if you're in Mexico City and you want some beautiful fucking ink, go to Moriarty Ink Mexico City, located on the biker hangar. It's amazing. They have beautiful designs. They are the best guys on the tattoo game there are. Go there, get some fucking ink, get beautiful.
Damas y caballeros, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Big Mo, and I am pleased to welcome you to your podcast main event. Introducing first, your host, he hails from Mexico City, Mexico, presenting Chair Monster, Jose Manuel. I am ready. Our host is ready. Are the listeners ready? No, I said podcast listeners tuning in across the world. Are you ready for Che Monster Talks?
Well, today's guest, straight out of Red 5 Performance, this guy is a strength coach for elite athletes. This guy looks like real-life Kratos also. You're Ian Hardwin. Hello, what's up, bro?
Not too much, man. How you doing?
All good. Excited to talk to you. I was watching your content. Bro, you're fucking strong. How long Thanks. Have you been lifting?
So I started lifting pretty seriously when I was 21. I'm 36 now, I just turned 36. And I've been an athlete my whole life though. So it's something that's always been a part of my life, but I got real serious with the weights around 21 and I've gone a lot of different directions since then. So I just started, you know, your typical, you know, bro splits, not really knowing what I was doing, just going hard and, you know, seeing gains just because I was lifting hard. Then I got real into CrossFit. So I did CrossFit for a long time. I competed at a pretty high level for a number of years and I coached at a really high level for a number of years there, but I was always just good at being strong and I always enjoyed that stuff. So once I got finished with that, obviously I still wanted to work out, so I got more into powerlifting, and that was always a part of what we did anyway, but it's just something that I could train less times per day. You know, I could train four times a week if I really wanted to versus three, four times a day at that level with CrossFit. So it's just a lot more fun for me. And yeah, I'm 36 now, so it's been, I guess, maybe coming up on 15 years since I started.
And that's amazing. Now, one quick question. What's your thoughts on all these memes and all these internet people giving shit to CrossFit? Because let's face it, CrossFit is the worst spoken sports.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it. So I think CrossFit is awesome if you do it correctly. But it's extremely difficult to do correctly. So I understand where a lot of the hate comes from. But if you look at these like top tier CrossFit athletes, I mean, they are absolute savages. And I've coached a lot of different athletes. And in the gym, it's not even remotely close. CrossFit athletes are by far the best in the gym, better than football, better than baseball, better than any regular sport, because that is their sport, is the gym. But there's a lot of high level skills. And the downside of CrossFit is you have a lot of coaches who are not very qualified teaching these high level skills to everyday people who don't really have this, you know, background in high level sports. So it gets really dangerous. So anybody that may be interested in something like CrossFit, I always tell people the same thing, man. Like, do your homework first before you go and sign up for a gym, because there's a lot of well-intended people out there that are coaches, but they just don't have the skill level to really coach you and keep you safe. And that's the number one thing when it comes to being a coach, is the number one rule is you got to keep people safe. And if you don't really know what you're doing, and especially if you're really excited about it, and then you're teaching, hey, let's do these snatches and muscle ups, and it's like 45-year-old accountant Tom doesn't really need to be doing snatches. You know, maybe he's super athletic and super mobile and he can do snatches, but the average person just doesn't really need to do that. So I understand where a lot of the hate comes from. Some of it's warranted, but there's a big difference between CrossFit, the extreme sport, and CrossFit, just the regular workout regimen. If you're just doing it just to get in shape, then there's no need for like super high level skills.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Now, as you previously said, you're a coach. Which kind of people do you think are the worst clients you could ever have?
Like from like a temperament, personality standpoint?
Anything. Especially, so, I could say like those motherfuckers who skip leg day, those people who are not willing to work their legs.
Yeah, I think it's just, for me, it's just people that aren't willing to work hard, right? And that's, there's two types of people that I really don't like working with. And that's why I work with mostly women now, is guys, you only get this with guys. They just want to fight you, man. It's like, they want to tell you how to do things. And it's like, why are you paying me money? If you're going to tell me what we need to do? Like, just listen, man. Like, I'm not trying to alpha male you. I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to help you get to your goals. And guys, it's just more, maybe it's my personality. I have less patience with guys, but women I have found are much more interested in learning how to do things the right way. And more times than not, what I have to do with women is to teach them intensity. And with guys, they have a lot of intensity, and more times than not, I got to pull the reins back and be like, listen, you need to learn some technique or this intensity is going to get you busted up in the long run. So that's, I definitely prefer working with women, but I work with a lot of guys too. It's more of a personality thing. Like, if you're a coachable person, if you want to get better, I want to be the best I possibly can be at any cost. Cool. Then we're going to be a good fit. But if you want to get better the way that you want to get better, then I'm probably not your guy. So that's the biggest thing. And I would say, just people that really drive me nuts are people that talk like they want to be really high level, but they act otherwise. And we get a lot of, from time to time, you get expectations that are not the same. So if you're like, hey, Ian, I want to break a world record. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to treat you like someone who wants to break a world record. And then you're not acting like that. And that's where a lot of tension arises. So I know that a lot of it's my job to teach you, but if I'm teaching you something and you continually don't do it, those are the two biggest personality types that really drive me nuts. But as far as like, you know, people who skip leg day and stuff like that, like, I don't care what people do, man. Like, do whatever makes you happy and just try to get better. And, you know, if that's not what I do, but just because you don't do what I do, like, I don't judge people. Everyone's on their own journey. And I just don't care. I just don't care enough about what other people are doing. You know, I'm trying to be focused on me and my journey. And if somebody just wants to just do biceps every single day, cool, man, do your thing. Just don't be a dick about it. It's when other people are like, no, you have to do things exactly what I'm doing, exactly the way that I'm doing it, or else you're a fucking loser. And it's like, all right, man. Then it doesn't matter what you're doing. So for me, it's more attitude and personality that I attract. And, you know, like I don't work with many people directly. I do a lot of online coaching now, and I work with my girls, two powerlifters, and I work with one lady and her mom. Her mom just turned 78 today. I actually worked with her in person. Normally I work with them over Zoom, you know, all COVID and all that stuff. So I've worked with them in person, and they're awesome, man. She's 78. Like, she just wants to get better. So I don't care what your ability level is. I just like working with people that want to get better. And if they want my help, if you want my help, then yeah, like, I would love to work with you. But if you don't want my help, that's fine. That's fine too. Just go work with somebody else or do your own thing.
Okay. That, I can see that. I think everybody has seen that alpha guy who is always telling you what to do, always correcting you, always telling you, no, bro, you need to lift heavy always, trying to max out every single day, only doing biceps and bench press. Why do you think these guys are trying to put to like fight you? Is it because you are like Kratos or something?
So what are you talking about, guys that like don't want to, that want to kind of do things their own way?
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about? So, all right. So I've coached some people before, and, you know, I coached a guy, and, you know, he's a young guy, and, you know, I got him really strong in a short period of time, but it's like, he's always like, he doesn't fully understand the big picture of fitness. And he just sees like in his little world, and in his little world, it's like, oh, well, this is what we should be doing. And it's like, well, there's a lot more to it, and there's a lot more long-term solution. So he's always like doing things that were like off the program that I write. And when you go off the program, then it affects things that are on the program and your recovery. So the things that are on the program are not going to go as well because you're doing things that are unaccounted for. So the whole thing doesn't work, because if you want to just do your own thing, that's fine. So it becomes this like, my way is better. And like, there's some people that are, you know, if you want to go on your own route and figure things out yourself, that's fine. And that's kind of what I did. Like, I've never really had coaches my whole life, not because I didn't want coaches. I just like figuring stuff out on my own. And I think that's what made me a really good coach. And, you know, there's a lot of failed experiments in my history. So when I see young guys that are similar, it's like, hey man, like, I can save you a lot of time. I know that you think that this is the right thing to do, but here's the big picture, and it's just not going to work out. So people that have that mentality, I know, like, I've been in it long enough to know that they're not going to reach their goals in the time frame that is necessary to reach their goals. So it ends up just being more of a headache than anything. And then I have other people that are like, tell me what to do. I'm like, do this. And they're like, okay. And those people, obviously, they're super easy to work with. You know, my favorite people are the ones that, like, I'd rather get into a battle with you. I'd rather get into an argument with you. And then at the end, we come to a solution and an agreement, and then we move forward. So I don't care about having arguments with athletes in the gym. That's kind of how it is, when, especially when the intensity is really high. But after that, we need to come to an agreement on how we're going to move forward. So if you're doing things on your own behind the scenes, like, that's, it's just not going to work. You know, you can't like mix and match programs and have optimal success. But I have no problem with getting into a battle with somebody. And that shows me that you care enough about what you're doing, where we can sit here and have this argument. And then it allows me an opportunity to educate you on all the details of exactly why we're doing things and the direction that we're going. And then afterwards, you know, you can move on. And that's totally fine by me. But when people, they don't want to have that confrontation, I can't fix something. If they're doing something that I don't know about, I don't know what variables are off if the program is not working. So yeah, I just know that in the long run, it's not going to work. Like, you need a plan. And I tell people all the time, like, I have young guys on TikTok that are asking me pretty regularly, like, hey, should I add these things in that you're talking about? My coach doesn't want us doing that. And I'm like, well, you should be doing them, but it's better to just listen to your coach, right? Because I don't know what his plan is. I don't know. And the way that you get hurt is by doing some of the things that I'm telling you to do, adding it to things that your coach has and you do. And neither one, it's just better to stick to a program. Even if it's not the best program in the world, it's better to stick to that than trying to mix and match stuff, because it really affects the recovery and you're really rolling the dice on your health. And, you know, if we're supposed to do a deadlift max today and yesterday you're doing heavy power cleans, like, that's not going to go well. Putting yourself at a big time power cleans yesterday, and that you're fully recovered and you're doing things the way that is written in the program, but you're not. And now you're going into something that can be kind of dangerous without a full tank of gas.
Okay. Now, talking about getting injured, I wanted to ask you, what's your thoughts on these very polemical podcasts with Joe Rogan and Robert Obrist, where he said that the deadlift isn't worth it and the risk to reward ratio is just ridiculous?
Yeah, that's caused me a lot of problems, man. I think he's came back afterwards and retracted that statement. But I understand why people say that. And So let's say, like earlier, I was talking about snatches and things like that in CrossFit. It's a very high level skill. So typically people can't go super heavy because they don't have the skills to get heavy enough, right? But with deadlift, it's the opposite. It's a very low skill movement. Now, to be like an elite deadlifter, obviously there's a lot more skills, but the average person can just pick something up off the ground as hard as they can. It's the most basic thing that you can do. So if you're just picking something up off the ground as heavy as you can, it can open things up to injuries. But it's not, there's no movements that are dangerous. There's movements that are, if not done correctly, can get you hurt, but you can say that about anything. So deadlifts offer one of the biggest rewards that you possibly can have in anything fitness related. There's really nothing better as a strength builder than deadlifts. And you can do them super heavy to build strength. You can do them super fast with lighter weights and bands and chains and things like that to be super explosive. It builds the posterior chain really better than anything. So the rewards are so high with deadlifts. Does it come with risk? Yes, everything comes with risk, but the biggest risk is in the coaching of the deadlift, not the movement itself. So just today, I told you I was working with a 78-year-old lady. It's her birthday. We did a max deadlift, and she deadlifted 95 pounds, and she's loving it. And, you know, could she have deadlifted more? Yeah, probably. But why? Why would I? You know, she's 78. You know what I mean? Like, why am I going to push her past something that was that I looked at her like that looked pretty hard. Okay, cool. Let's wrap that up. So someone's skill level, you know, the two girls that I coach are power lifters. Now we're going to be what people would say be rolling the dice a little bit more with them because they're more skilled lifters and they know their bodies. They know when something is out of place and when they should drop the bar. So there can be some risk with deadlifts, but it's not in the movement itself. It's more in the mentality of the lifter and the coach not pulling the reins back and being like, oh, I just watched the last one you just did. We had a little bit of form breakdown, immediately cut that off and move on. No, just let me do one more, coach. I can do more weight. I don't care if you can do more weight. Like, that's how you're going to get hurt. You already had some form breakdown, so stop and cut it off. And I've never, ever, ever in my entire career of coaching have had anybody injured from deadlifting. I've never had anybody injured. So especially from deadlifting, because I'm watching and I'm paying attention to every single athlete and knowing when I've already taught them technique and I've taught them the mindset of, hey, listen, this is what's important. And I've cut them off when things start to get to a point where it's like, okay, like I got out of this what we want. It was super hard for you. You got a little bit of form breakdown and that's it. Let's wrap it up and move on. Oh, I know I can do more. I know that you can do more, but you can't deadlift more. And those are two different things. You can pick more weight up off the ground, but that's not what we're doing. We're doing deadlifts. So I understand what people are saying that, you know, is there some risk? There's risk to anything. And it's not the movement. You know, if I put on 200 pounds heavier on my one rep max squat than what I can handle with perfect technique, like I'm way more at risk than if I do a deadlift at 90% of my max. So it's just more of a mindset and understanding intensity levels and, you know, load management and putting things together like that. But I think that's complete bullshit. I think deadlifts are by far one of the best things that anybody can do, period, regardless of what your goals are. Now I can see maybe from like a bodybuilding standpoint, it's not necessary, but you can still do it. You know, I used to work out with a guy who was a pro bodybuilder and he deadlifted more than me and I'm a power lifter. So, and his waist was this big. So his waist was smaller than mine. Deadlifted more than me. So you can do it all. Now, whether or not you want to do it all, that's just a personal choice. But if someone doesn't want to do deadlifts because they're afraid to do it, what I would say is just educate yourself on how to do the movement properly. And more importantly, how to load the movement properly. Because you look at, you know, some of the Chinese weightlifters, they're the best weightlifters in the world. And they're doing one rep max deficit rounded back deadlifts. I mean, if anybody who looks at that, if that was just a random person in the gym, they'd be like, oh my God, you're going to break your back. But since they're winning gold medals, no one says that. So it's not the movement. It's the load management, the intensity and understanding what your body is capable of and staying within your limit. That's it.
I've heard these very weird, but bizarre tip, like, okay, if you don't know how good your technique is, you will, and just obviously don't fucking load as much weight as you can. And if after after the set is done, if you feel any kind of pain, just stop.
Yeah, for sure. And it's when you're, you got to understand, like when you're lifting anything fitness related or anything that you do at a high intensity, right? There's risk to it. And if you, you need to be smart, you can't just do shit for the sake of doing it. So for me, like your background's in like MMA, martial arts, stuff like that. Like, I've never done that myself. I coach people to do that, but I've never performed that myself. So I know, let's say if I'm going to go like spar somebody, I'm going to be like, wait a minute. Let me like learn some shit first. take some lessons. Like maybe let me spar in like maybe like 3 months. I don't know. Give me a couple months to like figure this out. Like, I don't want to go and get my face beat in with no skills and no tools to defend myself. Like, let me learn a little bit about this first. But when it comes to deadlifting, people think that, you know, they walk in because they just see other people in the gym doing it and they think, hey, I'm an expert, I can do this. And you can do it, but just not at the level that maybe other people are doing. Take the time to take a step back and learn how to do things properly. Whether it's deadlifting, whether it's martial arts, anything that you do, it's better to learn the skills first and then move on and learn what your body can do and then increase the intensity as you get more and more comfortable with the movement. You know, it's going to be better to work with a coach, you know, where I'm hitting mitts and stuff like that first, then just going and immediately sparring somebody. And he said to any martial arts person, like, yeah, obviously, why would you ever do that? But when you say it to someone about deadlifting, though, it's just like this weird thing. Like, it's the same thing though. Like, learn how to do it. Don't be an idiot.
You would be surprised. I've met guys who are, it's their first class and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to spar.
Yeah. But it's the same thing with deadlifting. It's not smart.
It is not fucking smart. Like, I've met guys that have been lit up. I had one of my best friends. Shout out to Tomilio Giacomani if he's listening to this. But I took him to a jiu-jitsu class, and he was just seeing us rolling and all that. And he was like, "Okay, I think I got this. I'll try it." He's not big. He's like 130 pounds, something like that. And he was sparring with a 125-pound girl. She was beating his ass up. Like, he was helpless. Shout out to Gabby, too. I just remember seeing his face on terror. And there's guys that do that with boxing, too. And when it's boxing, almost always these guys are throwing haymakers. So if you're getting hit hard, you need to hit them harder. So guys get knocked out at the first round of sparring.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the perfect analogy with the deadlifting situation as well. Like, you have a 170-pound guy getting his ass kicked by a weight that in theory you would think that he should be able to beat that weight. So this guy goes in 170 pounds, getting his ass kicked by a 120-pound girl. Well, if you're a 170-pound guy and you think that you know what you're doing with deadlifting, you can get your ass kicked by weights that you think that you should be able to lift. But do you know how to, like, do you know how to brace, like, things that you should learn? Do you know how to brace properly? Do you know, you understand the mechanics of the movement? Do you know what your body can handle? Like, how much weight is going to break your brace? Like, these are things that people should learn first. And these are things I'm trying to teach people on my TikTok. It's like, hey, let me teach you how to do things the right way, so you can do more advanced stuff and get better faster. There's no reason to do something that's more advanced if it's not going to give you faster results. So the reason that people do advanced stuff like heavy good mornings and things like that, because it gives you better results than what people are doing. But there's skills involved to it. Just like there's skills involved to anything. If you want to do more advanced martial arts, you need to learn the skills. And that's the same thing. So once you learn it, your results are going to be so much faster once you learn the ins and outs. That's the stuff that I try to teach people. Hey, you got to be safe. And if you're safe, you'll lift more weight. So they go hand in hand. The safer you are, the better you're going to lift. And that's what a lot of people, especially younger guys, they just want to go hard. Like, I respect the intensity, but it's a long-term game. You know, if I wanted to be, you know, a black belt in jiu-jitsu, I need to take the mindset of this is going to take me like 10 years or maybe longer. I don't know. Right. So if I'm doing stuff today, like I'm trying to get this black belt in 6 months from now, it's going to be way different training than if I understand it's a long road to get there. And I'm going to do things a lot more right if I take a long approach. And that's what everybody should do. especially younger people in general, they want the results right this very second. And it's like, no, this is a long-term game. If you want to be really good at this, if you want to have the results that you really want, it just takes time. It takes time. And eventually, like, if you don't have a good foundation built, you're going to plateau, and then you're going to do crazy shit to try to break that plateau. And that's when things get dangerous.
Yeah, it's too sad. Sometimes I've been that guy many fucking times. I started lifting when I was 12, but I started taking it seriously when I was like 19. I'm 21 right now. And I remember plateauing and just even having the kind of depression. I don't know if that's the right word, but just being mad at having plateaued, not seeing the progress I wanted. Because let's face it, especially when you're young, you're expecting results on 2 or 3 days. You're looking at your biceps in between every fucking set.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I've been there too. Like, I've been that young, crazy guy. That's why I'm, you know, a little bit older and wiser now. And I see myself in a lot of these younger guys. That's why I respect the intensity, because you can do a lot with that intensity. But when things like plateaus come, it's just a puzzle that needs to be solved. And that's it. It's how I look at everything. Oh, you have a problem? Okay, cool. Let's figure it out. And then that will keep things moving forward. And instead of, let's just increase the intensity and that will bust through this plateau. Maybe sometimes that's the answer, but more times than not, it's just, okay, let's just change the things that we're doing. Maybe we're doing things, you've been doing too much of the same stuff and not enough of the right stuff. So let's just solve this puzzle, and then it's going to be way safer and way better in the long run. You're going to get way stronger, faster that way. So I'm interested. I'm not, it sounds like I'm like being like Mr. Cautious over here, and that's not my coaching style at all. My coaching style is the exact opposite. I'm as aggressive as you possibly can get. That's why I take this stuff so serious, because we're riding a fine line every single day of this is, you know, we're really pushing the limits hard. And if you are like that all the time, then all the time you need to be focused on these little things of like, is this too much? Because eventually it will be too much. And if you're not every single day watching that, then yeah, eventually you're going to run into something not so good. But I have an aggressive coaching style, and that's why I take the caution side of things seriously. And we got people that come on my live streams all the time, and they're like, they think otherwise. They're like, oh, how are you letting them have that technique? And it's like, dude, shut the fuck up. You guys don't know anything. Like, we're doing something today. So I had them do basically take like thick bands, and we set them up on a rack, and they're holding the bands and doing push-ups. So their feet are on the floor, they're holding the bands and doing push-ups. And think about it, these are girls that have like, you know, records for benching and stuff like that. They're not just like they can smash push-ups. It's nothing to them. So doing a set of 8 on bands is nothing. Somebody comes in, it's like, oh, watch, make sure, like, they got some lordosis in their lower back. And it's like, dude, these girls are repping 225 good mornings like nothing. Like, doing, if they got a little bit of lordosis in their lower back for something that we're just holding on to the bands for the push-ups for some shoulder stability. It's a shoulder stability exercise. Their lower back is going to be fine, right? They're doing sets of 8 push-ups. Just shut the fuck up. But you get so many people that they don't really understand, you know, the deeper levels of how you actually get injured. Like, what's the fundamentals and the physiology of injuries, and what's the biomechanics of injuries? And they just come in and they just want to say stuff to be heard. Hey, pay attention to me. I know what I'm talking about. And it's like, well, not, you know, a little bit about what you're talking about, and that's dangerous. So yeah, it's more just about the intensity, you know? And like I said, like, that's why I have a really aggressive style. If you manage the intensity, you can get the fastest gains possible without injuries, but you just have to be very serious about like form breakdown. So it's not necessarily the form itself that could be good or bad. Well, you know, air quotes on that. Is the form breaking in the middle of the movement or not? That's what's dangerous. So you can do rounded back good mornings. I can do rounded back good mornings with 500 pounds and bands. And then if I post a video, people are like, oh, this dude's going to break his back. And it's like, dude, my back is so fucking strong. Like, I'm not going to break my back. I didn't start off doing that. You know, it took me years and years and years to build that up. But you can do rounded back movements. You can do any sort of movements that, you know, knees over toes. You can do all this stuff. It's just the intensity of the movement needs to be correct or you're going to be fucked. But if I'm doing this rounded back movement I'm maintaining the position of my back that I want the whole time. So if I'm at the bottom and then the position breaks, yeah, that can be dangerous, but that's not what's happening. I'm just choosing to be in this rounded back position.
It's so the volume or intensity? So it's more than anything, the intensity. I remember one of your TikToks where you were saying, like, they asked you if technique matters, and you said, it yes, it does, but simultaneously it doesn't, because, for example, a basketball player doesn't need to have a perfect technical deadlift.
Yeah, so all right. So what I meant by that was, does technique matter? Yeah, it matters, but it matters for different reasons. And when it comes to injuries, technique doesn't matter. And I know there's going to be people listening to this, like, oh, what the fuck is this guy talking about? But just hear me out, right? So your body has tissues, right? Muscle, tendon, ligaments, things like that. And your body doesn't know what technique is, right? Your body just understands one thing, force. Force is the language of the body. So when you place force on tissues, the tissues can either handle that force or it cannot handle that force. It's simple. So if you're putting more force on the tissues than what they can handle, they're going to break. So how does technique have any sort of role in that whatsoever? Well, technique just allows you to choose which tissues are feeling that force, right? So if you, that's why I say broken technique is dangerous. But any other technique, you can do rounded back, good mornings, that's not dangerous, because you're choosing to load these tissues, and you're going to choose a weight, if you're smart, you're going to choose a weight that those tissues can handle. That's way different. So if I do a rounded back deadlift, I'm going to be doing it with way less weight than I'm doing with a regular deadlift, right? So right now I can deadlift 650 pounds. If I'm doing a regular deadlift and my back starts to round in the middle of that movement, now that's dangerous, because I'm picking a weight that I want to be not in a rounded position, and I'm loading my back up. So if I'm in the middle of that and then I change the technique and now I load tissues in a different way, they can't handle that, and that's why I can get hurt. But if I choose to do rounded back deadlifts first, maybe I have 225, maybe I have 315. The tissues can handle that weight with that much load. So when it comes to injuries, it's just, are you loading the tissues too much or not? And when you change the technique, you change the tissues that are being loaded in the middle of the lift. And more times than not, you're changing them to tissues that can't handle the weight that you chose to lift in the first place. So that's what I meant by that. But technique is important for movement patterns. If I'm trying to perform something, all right, perfect example. Like I'm probably a little bit stronger than you. And if we do jujitsu, you're probably gonna kick my ass because I have no technique. Right. So when it comes to movement patterns, like, you know how to perform movement patterns better and more efficiently than me when it comes to that specific thing. So it matters when you're trying to put together a movement like a deadlift. The body is saying, okay, we have all these moving parts now, and we need to perform this in a certain sequence to produce the maximum amount of efficiency with the strength that we have. That's why technique is important, is maximizing efficiency, but it really doesn't have anything to do with injuries. Now, broken technique is typically what leads to injuries, but that's not the fundamental issue of injuries. And that's basically what I was trying to say. It's hard to say all that in a under 60 second TikTok though. I think I did a good enough job.
You did a great job. And now you have a podcast that can be as long as you want to shit on as many subjects. You can destroy as many taboos, and you can say whatever the fuck you want here.
Also. So this is kind of a good way for people that are interested in what I'm talking about, a good way to kind of visualize it. Imagine, you're standing in a circle with 10 of your best friends, and we're all holding hands, and then we lean back, right? So now we're all going to be super tight. And the reason that I don't fall to the floor is because there's this tension with this whole circle, right? So, and the more gravity pushes on us, the tighter that circle gets. And that's kind of how the body works. So we call that biotensegrity. So we're sharing this load among all the tissues in the surrounding areas, if you're choosing to do that the right way. So now let's say we're in the circle, we're holding hands, our arms are out, and then somebody sits on my arm. All right, well, I'm going to start to dip down a little bit. I'm going to change position, but the rest of the group is going to support that weight as well. It's not just me, right? So eventually there's going to be too much weight on there where that just breaks. And that's what, that's the tissue's limit. Is there every tissue has a limit. So eventually you're going to put too much on there and it's going to break. And that's what injuries happen. But when you're doing things like rounded back of mornings, it's not like, oh my, you're going to kill your spine. Well, it's like, it's not my spine that's taking this load. It's all the surrounding tissues that are working together in unison to help me lift this weight. And once you start understanding that, this kind of stuff is really the future of the fitness world, is understanding that everything is all connected in your body, and what you do down in your feet affects what you do up in your hands, and everything is literally connected. And you're starting to see this with, especially this stuff is really big, it's starting to get big, I say, in the martial arts world, where you're starting to see people do much more like flowing type of exercises that are much more highly coordinated exercises, where it's like a spin and a lunge and a throw, like all in one movement. And strengthening those patterns and getting the body to work together in a much more efficient way. So when you start to add things like deadlifts and squats, those are the strength builders, and then more flowing type movements are what keeps the body, or what teaches the body to work more efficiently together. So by doing those movements, you gain control of your body better. So you can break it down to a fundamental level of your joints, right? So like, say like your knees can flex and extend. Everybody can do that, right? You can do it right now. I'm just extending my knee, but they also abduct and adduct, and they also rotate. So not very much, because that's not how the joint's designed, but they can do it. So can you rotate your knee without moving your hip or without moving your ankle? Well, most people probably can a little bit, but do you have like good control of that position? Okay, well, I can do it on my right side or my left side too. Oh shit, my left side, I can't do it as well. So you can't control all of the abilities of your knee. And when it's just in a controlled like situation, like right now, I'm just sitting down. If I'm just sitting down, I can't control my knee to the best of its ability. And then I'm going to go jump. I'm a wide receiver. I'm going to go jump for a ball and then land. And I'm just assuming that I can control my knee in this highly dynamic scenario. You're not going to be able to do that. So when you start to learn, when we start to gain control of each individual joint, they start to work together way better in these more dynamic movements, and the body is just more efficient, and you can do like way crazier shit. So the future of fitness is going to be fucking cool, man. You're going to see like kids that are in like middle school now are going to be killers by the time that they're my age. So, and that's going to be the same thing with every generation. Think about any generation in history. People are only getting bigger, stronger, faster, at an even faster rate than any point in time in history. And that's kind of the next stage of people, is learning how to gain fundamental control of each individual joint first when they're young, and then building on way more dynamic movements. So let's say I'm benching. Can you control the position of your scapula while you're benching? Can you control the degree of rotation in your shoulder and your elbows and your wrist? Well, if you ask an average person who bench presses, they'll be like, I've never even thought about that ever in my life. But if those are the things you're thinking about, oh, I need to be rotated this much here, and then you can make your body all work together, you're just going to be way better at it. And more importantly, you're going to be way healthier, because you're not benching from a position where, oh, my left shoulder is not as rotated as much as it should be, but my right shoulder is. And now you're creating imbalances and you're loading that up. And over time, that's going to catch up to you. So it's a pretty interesting field. And I just like the nerd stuff, but that's kind of the next level of everything that's happening right now, is biotensegrity stuff.
I've never heard about that. I will read a shit ton about that now.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So just a couple people that are doing it that are kind of popular, you can check into. And one is FRC, functional range conditioning. That's like, it's basically like a brand, you know, they're selling their knowledge. And then functional patterns, same thing. He's selling his knowledge. And the guy that does functional patterns on Instagram, he's on there. And honestly, his personality just drives me insane. But he definitely has results, man. Like, he's a smart guy. And he has a lot of results with like almost impossible situations. You know, people with like crazy, crazy scoliosis, or people with cerebral palsy or things like that. And then he has these before and afters where he's teaching people with cerebral palsy how to move way more efficiently. And he has people with scoliosis that now have like way straighter backs and their shit was like totally jacked up. So he understands this stuff pretty well. And there's some things that I don't agree with what he says, but you know, I can say that about everybody. There's not really anybody on planet Earth. And I'm like, I 100% agree with everything this person says, but yeah, they're definitely pretty smart people and something to look into as far as the next step, if people are interested in that.
Now, I wanted to ask you about this very fucking stupid myth there is on athletics training, sports-specific training especially, the idea that lifting weights will make you slower.
So lifting weights can make you slower, but it just depends on how you do it. So again, like everything depends on how you do it. And that's why a lot of my programs, well, all of my programs, we do a lot of athleticism type stuff. So what's going to make you slower? So let's say I work with a powerlifter, right? This is a great example as to how this translates into sports. Let's say I work with a powerlifter, and typically in powerlifting, you see like it's more of like a spectrum, I guess. But on one end of the spectrum, you have people that are really slow lifters, but they can grind a lift out like for fucking ever, right? They can just grind like crazy, but they're not very explosive. They can't jump very high, but they can just grind and grind and grind. And that's good. That's a good quality to have. And then there's other people that are on the other end of the spectrum that are super explosive lifters and they lift really fast. And let's say both of them can deadlift 600 pounds. Which one's better? Well, neither of them are better. They both can deadlift 600 pounds. So the way that I train, if I have someone that's super explosive and they're not very good at grinding, what I want to do is I want to slow them down, right? I want them to continue to be explosive, but I need to do movements that are going to slow them down to get them to grind longer, because that's what's going to help them the most. And then if I have someone that's a really slow grinder, I need to do more explosive movements. That's what's going to help that athlete the most. So it depends on the style of training. So if you're an athlete and you're listening to this, stop training like a bodybuilder and start training like an athlete. You need to do explosive lifting. You need to do heavy, slow lifting to get you strong, but you also need to do explosive lifting. So a lot of my videos, you have me and the girls, we're doing, you know, 50% of my one rep max deadlift. And then I add, you know, maybe 25 to 30% band tension. And I'm just trying to smash this as fast as I possibly can. Like there's no point in time where that lift slows down. So at the top of the movement, you know, if I'm doing 30% bands, that's 80% of my max at the top. And then I'll wave that up for 3 weeks. So week one, 50%, week two, 55%, week three, 60%. So by the end of week three, at the top is 90% of my max, but at the bottom is still 60%. So I'm just trying to smash this as fast and as aggressively as I possibly can. And that's what keeps you fast as an athlete. So doing the maxes, that's going to slow you down. But doing the dynamic work, that's what's going to keep you fast and explosive. And then we also add a lot of jumping and plyometrics. So on like a Monday, we do a max effort lower body movement. So it's some sort of one rep max, typically of either some sort of squat variation, deadlift variation, or good morning variation. And a lot of times for good mornings, we do 3 rep maxes. It's just a little bit safer. And then when we're finished with that, we'll do like some heavy volume of a specific thing, like a compound movement that's specific to our weaknesses. And we'll do that for like maybe like a 3x3 or 3x5, something like that. But then we go into jumping and we do about 40 to 60 total jumps. And usually it's in sets of 3 to 6. You know, I'm not married to all these sets. I'm telling you guys, I'm saying the general stuff that I do. And then we jump. So if we lift really heavy, then we do jumping and that keeps us fast and explosive. And then a second day of the week, Friday, we do the stuff I was telling you before. We'll do squats, typically like a 12 sets of two, anywhere from like 5x5 to 12 sets of 2. We're in the 24 rep range is where total rep range is where we want to be. And then we add bands to it. Then we do the same thing for deadlifts. A lot of times we do like 6 sets of 3, something like that, for 18 total reps. But we're just trying to smash these weights as fast as humanly possible. And then again, we jump. So what you want is, think of it on a spectrum. I'm trying to increase the maximum amount of force that my body can produce. All right, right now, my muscles can only produce so much force. And I want to continually increase that what that maximum number is. That's why we do one rep maxes. But I also want to increase the speed at which I can go from 0 to 100% force production. That's important, especially for athletes. So for athletes, that's probably way more important than how much force you can produce. But they all go together. I don't want to say one's more important than the other. And then jumping is, or plyometrics, if we're doing upper body stuff, that's going to, that initial burst from the brain to the muscles, we can get a higher percentage of muscle fibers firing. Like we can basically start the engine. So right away, from if I can get 20% of my total tension right away, I'm not going to be as good as somebody that can get 30% right away. Because that means I have 70% to go. If I can get 30% right away, that means I only have 70% left to go to get to my max tension. And then the faster that I can get there, the more athletic I am. So all of them work together. So a lot of times I have, you know, people ask if I'm a track athlete or I'm a jumper, and hey, how do I jump higher? I get that question a lot. So I live stream a lot. How do I jump higher? Well, I don't know. The answer is specific to you. Can you not produce enough force, or can you not produce force fast enough? Because those are two different things. So if you're like, dude, I'm insanely explosive, but I just can't jump any higher. Well, then you need to focus on getting stronger. And the more powerlifting type movements that you do, the better you're going to get. Where if you're someone that's the other way around, it's like, no, I can produce a lot of force. Say someone more like me, I can produce a lot of force, but I'm not going to be able to produce force nearly as fast as someone who's an actual jumper, right? So if I wanted to get better at jumping, me specifically, I would need to do a lot more explosive and speed work, because, you know, I'm not nearly as explosive as someone who's a jumper. So it all comes down to ask yourself the question. This is true for any sport, any event, anything. You need to ask yourself a line of questioning first. Why can't, let's say 100 meters, why can't I run faster? Like, why am I not as good at the thing that I want to be good at? And then you need to really break that down to the most fundamental level and understand why you're not good. So, okay, let's say 100 meters. Is my top speed not fast enough? Is my acceleration to top speed fast enough? Is my start out of the blocks not fast enough? Because those are all three totally different problems. And if your top speed is amazing and your acceleration is amazing and you stink coming out of the blocks, spend all this time training top speed and acceleration. It's only going to help you so much, where you can get really, really good, really, really quick relative if you work on your starts, right? Or you work on other things that make you physically good out of the blocks as well. So answer those questions and say, okay, well, my acceleration is not so good. Okay, well, how do we fix that? Well, is your acceleration good? Because like, what is acceleration? All right, we're applying force into the ground, and the ground's applying force back on us with equal and opposite. You know, it's Newton's third law of motion, and then it's pushing us forward. The ground's pushing us forward. So how do I increase that? Well, I can either push faster into the ground, or I can produce more force and push into the ground. And it goes back to what we were just talking about. So is your acceleration not so good because you need to be stronger, or because you need to be more explosive? And then you still train all of them, but you just load up where you're the most weak, and you're going to get so much better, so much faster by doing that, by really identifying your biggest weaknesses and then training like that. So let's say deadlifting. All right, well, my hamstrings are weak. Okay, cool. We identified the problem. How are they weak? That's the next question. Are they not strong enough, or are they not fast enough? And then you can continue to break things down. And then once you get to this fundamental answer, you just fix it. And then you'll start, once you fix that, you'll start hitting PRs, then a new problem will come up, and then you fix that problem, then a new problem. And that just goes on forever, but you're just continuing to make gains the entire way by finding the biggest problem and just immediately fixing it as fast as possible, and trying to maintain or slightly build the things that you're already good at.
Okay, that was a great answer. Now, because let's face it, everybody has known this coach who said like, no, lifting weights is not needed. It's not necessary, but it can help.
I think it is necessary. I think it definitely is necessary. And it's just, I mean, a lot of coaches, they just don't get it, right? So if you're a football coach, you're not an expert in the science of strength and conditioning. You're an expert in football, and that's why they hire strength and conditioning coaches. But a lot of times they don't, not a lot of times, but oftentimes you see the coaches don't vibe with the strength and conditioning coach, and it's kind of like this battle between the two. And like I coached, you know, college, and I've seen this before where it's like, oh, the cross country team, the cross country coach doesn't believe in lifting. It's like, what does that even mean? So if you're the if you're the strength coach for the cross country team, then what can you do? Like, you literally can't do anything because the cross country coach doesn't want. So you have to do like some dumb shit because you're not allowed to do things that actually make sense. And then what happens with that cross country team? This is my experiences. They're injured left and right because they're not strong enough to handle. Like, it's an old school way of thinking with cross country. It's just like volume of running, volume, 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 but they're not strong enough. They're not durable enough to handle that. And that's where the durability comes from, is from lifting. And then they get hurt. So there's a big disconnect a lot of times between the head coaches of a sport team and a strength coach. And the strength coach is always going to be the lower man on the totem pole. So you kind of have to do what the head coach allows you to do, unfortunately. But yeah, as things get better and better, like, you, every sport should lift weights to some degree, right? So if you're an ultra marathon runner, you should be lifting weights. You know, maybe the way that you lift weights is pulling heavy sleds, right? Maybe you're power walking with, you know, like a moderate weight sled for, you know, 400 meters or 800 meters or a mile, or a light sled, you're power walking for 2 miles, something like that. Like, that's a form of weightlifting as well. It doesn't have to be max deadlift. It doesn't have to be that all the time, but you need to train where your sport, like what you need specifically for your sport and where you specifically as an athlete are the most weak. And weightlifting will always help if you do it the right way. And it just needs to be like in harmony with what the sport coaches are having them do, right? So if I have, you know, if they're having them do sprints in practice, you know, say football team, they're having them do sprints in practice, and I have them doing something not knowing that in the gym, that's going to fuck the whole thing up. So, but really the best teams, the strength coaches are all, they understand everything that's going on with practice. They communicate, both sides communicate well together, and they come up with a plan. You know, it's like a round table. Okay, head coach, assistant coach, strength coach, physical therapist. You have all the people that all in on everything that's going on, all the details, because that's how it needs to be. Everybody needs to know everything that's going on. So you're not mix and matching programs. Everyone's on the same page. Like, hey, we have this thing that we're doing on Wednesday, so we need to back things off in the gym. Excuse me. We have to back things off in the gym Monday and Tuesday. Well, if I don't know that and I don't back things off, then Wednesday's not going to go so well. But yeah, lifting will always help. It needs to be done the right way.
Now, for example, most of the audience listening are fighters.
Okay.
At least that I know. What lifts do you think they are the most, would you consider that would be the most important lifts or exercises that someone who wants to knock someone out?
All right. So they want to gain power, punching power. Okay. So someone wants to gain punching power, I would do a lot of sumo deadlifts. So not a lot. So I would do sumo deadlifts one time a week. I would do it heavy, right? But just get in and get out, right? So for us, we do one rep maxes every single week, but we get in and we get out. So I set it up. So I'll give you an example. For my deadlift at 650, if I was going to go for a 655 PR, this is how I would do it. I would do a good general warm up, and then I would do 135 for, you know, maybe sets of three until I feel good. So 135, that's nothing for me. I can do sets of three until, okay, technique is feeling good, I'm feeling warmed up. I'll do 225 for two, 315 for two, 405 for one, 495 for one, 585 for one, 655 for a PR. That's seven total sets, and then that's it. I'm in, I'm out, and that's it. And if I hit 655, it's, oh man, I probably could have hit 670. Okay, well, I'm just going to wrap it up. I'm going to move on, and I'll keep that in mind for next time, and then I'll make the jumps a little bit differently to get to 670. So this is where a lot, like, you don't want to spend, especially if you're a fighter, you don't want to spend too much time on doing heavy lifting, but you don't want to spend no time on heavy lifting. So that's where the amount that you do is super important. So I would do sumo deadlifting, because when you sumo, you're grabbing your feet into the ground and you're trying to rotate the hips, and then you're trying to push away from the body. So that builds up big time strength in the hips and the abductors and external rotators of the hips. And that's where a lot of your punching power comes from. And I'm trying to push off the ground with my feet, and the ground, again, like we were talking about earlier, I'm going to push on the ground laterally and in a rotation, exactly what I'm trying to do in the opposite direction with sumo deadlifting. and the ground's going to push back on me. So the harder I push into the ground in the same exact direction that I'm or the opposite direction I'm trying to go, I'm going to get more power, right? So I would do, that's why sumo deadlifting for athletes, for most athletes or any athlete that do lateral side to side movements, is super important because it builds up the hip strength so much. And that's where a lot of your power comes from. So I'll do sumo deadlifts. I'll also do sumo deadlifts once a week, really, really fast and explosive, like I was talking about earlier. So maybe instead of 50, 60%, maybe do like 40 to 50% and you add more bands and you're just trying to do this so fast. You're trying to just smash as fast as you possibly can with good technique. That's important, right? So technique first, and then you try to build the speed up from there. And then you need to do core like rotational exercises. So big time power exercises, like you could do med ball throws where you're twisting and doing like a, I don't really know how to just kind of describe it without visually knowing, but I'm almost like a Russian twist, but I'm standing, I'm throwing the ball like that and do it explosive, right? So you can get some heavier med balls and, you know, let's say I can grab a 100-pound med ball and I can kind of barely do it, right? Then I would maybe stick to like 50 pounds. And sometimes I'll do it at 50 pounds and try to do it fast and explosive on both sides. And sometimes I'll go to like 20 pounds and just, I'm trying as fast as I possibly can throw this thing. And sometimes I will do it even heavier. So it's hard to say like exactly do this many reps with this much weight, but those are the types of exercises I would do. I would do something where you take like, a straight barbell and you're doing basically Russian twists with it. That's something you can do for strength. And I would do something that's pretty light where I'm doing it super fast. So I'm trying to train the muscles of rotation. I'm trying to train them heavy. I'm trying to train them fast, and I'm trying to train them like moderate weights for as fast as I can as well. So there's not just train this movement, it's train this movement in this particular way, which is a couple different ways. And then I would do bench pressing. I know a lot of people hate on bench pressing, but like, oh, it's bad for your shoulder. It's not bad. Nothing is bad for you unless you do it the wrong way. So if you get stronger in your chest and your triceps, your deltoids, like you're going to be able to hit harder. And especially if you have more core power, rotational power, and you have big time hip power. So you need to build the hips, you need to build the core rotation, and then you need to build the upper body strength. So I'll do the same thing with the deadlifts as with the bench press. And then you can do, say, deadlifts are on Monday, do bench presses on Wednesday and Saturday. One time you're doing heavy. Like I said, just get in and get out, get something heavy. You don't need to spend that long, 20 minutes max working up to something like that. And then on Friday, you do maybe like 9 sets of 3. And maybe like 40%, and you're just trying to smash these weights with bands as fast as you can. Like if I do 40% of my max on a bench with 25% band tension, I could probably do 15 of like a max set, maybe more. So if I'm doing 3, that's nothing. So I'm just trying to do them as fast as I possibly can because I want to stay fast. The goal isn't to just do it. The goal is to do it and stay fast and explosive the whole time. So these are just general things that, off the top of my head that I would do to increase punching power is you need to increase the amount of force that you can produce. And what is force? Force is mass times acceleration. So if you can increase the acceleration, you're going to hit harder. So if you can increase the amount of force that you can produce overall, if you can increase the amount of force the muscles can produce, the top end, and you can increase the acceleration, you're going to hit harder. So a lot of it comes from the hips and wide stance box squats. Again, because what we're trying to do, if you do them the right way, people, when they squat and deadlift, they just think of it as like a linear type of movement. We call it sagittal plane of flexion and extension of the knees and the hips, but it's not. All of our lifts should be multi-planar movements, meaning if I'm going to squat, I need to be rotating my hips. I need to be abducting my hips. And I need to be flexing and extending my hips at the same time. So the rotation and the abduction, that's stabilizing me. And then the flexion and extension is as the actual movement, allowing me to make that movement the most efficient way possible. So it's the same thing when you're punching, like it's many different planes at once going into one movement pattern.
Great. So great. Now fighters have at least boxers now have like a little cheat sheet.
Yeah.
What to do.
This is just like some general things. Again, like if you're super strong, then you need to be more explosive. So you could do stuff where like you could get like, I mean, a lot of the stuff like I would just find a way to figure it out, right? Maybe get like a wrist cuff, like an ankle cuff, right? That you have, but like attach it to my wrist And then I'll put like a super light band on it, and you could like shadow box with the bands or something like that. And if you have a band that only adds like a couple pounds of resistance, it's not going to be that much. Like, you don't want to maybe go super heavy where you have like 10-pound dumbbells or something, like it's just going to make you too slow. But if you have, let's say, like a micro band that adds only a couple pounds of resistance, you can still pretty much punch at the same speed, but you do have that resistance. And when you take it off, like, you'll feel the difference, because the farther you go, it's going to help you to accelerate all the way through the entire punch instead of just this big power in the beginning. That's what bands do. They help you to accelerate the entire movement. You can do some shadow boxing, something like that. So if I had somebody, I would just be like, all right, let's just experiment with some things and see what works. And adding a little bit of band resistance typically helps you to move faster, but you don't want to do too much band resistance, because then you're just going to be moving slow.
Now we already talked a lot of strength training and sports science, we could say. Now tell us, now let's get to know a little bit more about Ian. What is a big personal pet peeve you have with gym goers?
A big personal pet peeve I have is people that put down other people. I hate that, man. It's like, everybody's on their own journey, and just focus on you, man. Like, I say this all the time. Like, Michael Phelps is, you know, he's my favorite athlete of all time. The guy's just the definition of a champion, right? If you really look into his training habits and his story, the guy's a killer, man. But there's a classic picture of him, and he's about to win a gold medal in 100 butterfly. And when you're swimming butterfly, you can either look up and breathe, or you can look to the side and breathe. And there's a picture of him basically neck and neck with this guy, and he's looking up at the wall, and the guy next to him is breathing to the side, looking over at Phelps. And it's like, winners focus on winning, losers focus on winners. And just pay attention to what you're doing, and that's it, man. And I see it doesn't really happen that much, but like, yeah, people that like look at other people, or they see someone that's overweight and they're on the treadmill, or you see some skinny guy who's like just starting out. It's like, people that, you know, are laughing behind their back, or, you know, God forbid they say something to their face. It's like, dude, you can really affect people's lives, man. Like, a lot of times, just the fact that person showed up to the gym is like the most courageous thing they've ever done in their entire life. You know, like, not everybody is like some super tough guy. I've been an athlete my whole life. Like, most people aren't like that. So when you're putting down someone else, there's no benefit to you, and only can hurt them. And sometimes it can really, really hurt people, where for the rest of their life, they're going to remember that, and they're never going to go back to the gym. And like, you can really long-term, you know, affect people. And the only people that do that anyway are people that have massive insecurities with themselves. So if you're one of those people, just be someone that's encouraging, man. Like, try to be someone, if you're like, for me, I just don't say anything to anybody, you know, like, I just want to do my own thing. But if people, you know, people look at me and I understand, you know, I could be like a pretty scary looking guy, the average person. But if someone comes up to me and asks me a question, like, dude, I'll help people all day long. And it's weird. I always find like, there's always like certain stereotypes of people that actually come out and talk to me. And a lot of times, like old ladies, like, they don't give a fuck, man. They're like, oh, like, they're asking me a question. What are you doing over here? And like, I'm explaining something. Next thing you know, I'm like teaching them how to squat and shit like that. Like, people love that. So just be somebody that's a giver and not somebody that's a taker. Like, if you have some knowledge, and at the very least, like, just don't say anything. And if people ask you for help, help them out. But don't be the person that like puts down other people, and just in life in general, but especially in the gym, man, because you don't know someone's story and you don't know what people are going through. And it's just a pussy move to do that. That's my biggest thing.
Yeah, that's very asshole-ish. That was a very good pet peeve. I was expecting something like people who don't take out the weights out of the bar when placing it back on the rack, but that was a way better answer.
Yeah, like I said, like, I just do my own thing, man. Like, when I'm at the gym, I'm focused, and I'm focusing on me. So people that aren't putting their weights back and things like that, like, I a lot of times don't really notice that stuff as much unless it directly affects me. But yeah, I mean, yeah, that stuff can be irritating. Luckily, now I go to a gym that's it's a pretty hardcore gym, and I train in the middle of the day when it's dead. So a lot of times I have the place to myself, but normally there's, you know, 3, 4, 5 people in there, and that's it. And the people that go to the, that's why I like going to those types of gyms versus just a commercial gym, is most people that go to those types of gyms have pretty good etiquette. Like, they're there to work out. And, you know, if you're like, there's people that go to the gym just to be seen, and that's fine. If that's what you want to do, that's fine. But that's not what I want to do. So instead of going to a commercial gym and then being upset all the time with people that aren't there for the same reasons as me, I just go to a gym that has people that are there for the same reasons as me. But, and I, most of those gyms, like, you got people that are fucking monsters, and those types of people are generally the way nicer people and way more helpful people than we find at commercial gyms. I made a post about this on TikTok. Like, find the gym that's got the scariest looking people and go there, because they're generally the nicest people. I'm sure you have that in the martial arts world too, man. Like, there's the people that are really fucking good are generally the nicest people. And yeah, you know, I know some martial arts people that are pretty fucking good, and the better they are, typically the nicer they are, because they don't have anything to prove, man. They're like, yeah, I know I'll fuck you up, I don't need to be a dick to you. It's like, yeah, it's true.
Yeah, that's very true. There's actually a very big stereotype on the jiu-jitsu community that they are nerds or surfers, that, and sometimes it's true. Like, there's this guy Mikey Musumeci, he is world champion, he has a fastest submission on a world championship, it was 13 seconds, and he looks like a scrawny nerd. And he sometimes he posts something playing with Batman figures, and you look at him like, bro, you wouldn't think this guy could kill you in 15 seconds. This guy would murder you. And there's also the other spectrum, this Chocolate Dell trying to imitate dudes who don't really know anything, but hey, they feel fucking hardcore.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I know some pretty serious dudes over the years. And I lived with this one guy. He's like maybe 5'5". He's just a little guy, man. Like, the nicest dude ever. Like, we'd be like, this when I was younger, we'd be like out at the bars, and like, you know, people be fucking. I never once I've ever seen this guy lose like emotional control. He's just always in control. But, you know, he's a dude that he was like Green Beret. Before I met him, he like does Kung Fu. He like lived in this like Kung Fu dojo in like third world China. Like, nobody spoke English and he doesn't speak Chinese, and just did Kung Fu like all day, every day. He's just a weird guy, you know, but like, he's super nice and super cool. And he's a dude that just like will fuck you up, man. Like, an average person that's like, people are like picking on him, and he's just like always cool. And then when you get to know him, like, oh wow, you're like not that big of a guy, but like, you're a fucking killer. Like, so I'm gonna not fuck with you. But I know plenty of guys like that are actual, like, for real world badasses, and they're the most unassuming guys. And then you have the guys that are the biggest, loudest guys, generally are the ones that are, they want to be like that, but they know that they're not deep down inside. So they have to be like loud and vocal and let everyone know that, hey, I'm tough, man. It's like, well, if you were that tough, you wouldn't have to like tell everybody.
Yeah, being alpha, tough, and built different, if you have to say it, is not true.
Yeah, for sure. Agreed.
Yeah, it's very funny. There's always these very weird stereotypic things with, for example, powerlifters. I love powerlifting. I once competed on that. I sucked, by the way, even though I'm a big guy, especially in Mexico. I'm 6'6", and I'm 205 pounds today, which is big here, but I'm not that good at it. But sometimes people are expecting, like, hey, you lift weights, especially powerlifters, like, they have to be these hyper masculine dudes and this super rude man and whatever. And most powerlifters I've met were like almost always, I don't know why, but they love pink Converse.
Yeah, Converse is a go-to shoe in powerlifting for sure. But yeah, a lot of the powerlifters that I know, especially like the heavyweight guys, dude, they're like the nicest people ever. because they're usually like these big, like monstrous dudes, and everywhere they walk, people in society look at them like, you know, like they're Shrek or something. But deep down inside, they're like, yo, I'm just a normal person. I just happen to be fucking gigantic and crazy strong. But yeah, Converse. So just flat sole shoes, man. That's what people like. You want to be stable. You see a lot of people that lift barefoot, not in competition. You can't do that. But like, just generally speaking, you see some people lifting barefoot. But in powerlifting, you want the smallest sole that you possibly can, because you don't want to be higher up from the ground than you have to be, which means you got to go down lower to get the bar. You want a really flat-soled shoe, thin sole. And with deadlifting, they even make like slippers that are basically like not even a shoe at all. And something like the Converse a lot of people wear, or Vans a lot of people wear, because they're high tops and give you just a little bit of ankle stability. But if you have like a squishy sole, it's caused some instability, and it causes you lose a little bit of force production to the ground. So that's the go-to shoe. But you're starting to see Vans. Vans are getting a lot more popular than Converse. They're just a little bit wider. Converse, like, I got pretty skinny feet, so Converse work really well for me. But for some people, Converse, the toe box is a little too narrow for some people. So Vans are starting to get a little bit more popular.
Yeah. Okay. Now, also a big part of powerlifting, I don't know how much of this stereotype is true, but that most times you end up eating everything on the fridge.
Yeah, I mean, that's unfortunately a stereotype, but I think you're looking at, there's like a kind of a new age of powerlifting. And that's what Red 5 Performance really is all about, is let's take all the stuff that we know how to do and let's do it. And you're looking at powerlifters now, like, it's fat powerlifters are going to be a thing of the past. So now that's a thing. There's the thing with powerlifting. Like, if you eat more, like, there's no punishment really for that. Like, you're going to lift pretty well if you have more calories, but you're just going to get a little bit fatter over time, which is not where you want to be. But there's no immediate punishment. But if you have your diet the right way, like, you can still be pretty lean and be super strong. And you're starting to see that in some of these like heavyweight powerlifters, they're fucking jacked. And that's going to be the future, is you have to diet, man. Because if you're 25 pounds overweight, you could lose that 25 pounds and go compete down, you know, a weight class or two weight classes. If you just dieted the right way, it just takes longer than bodybuilding. You know, bodybuilding, you can cut down really, really fast because you don't have to worry about losing strength. Where powerlifting, that's what it's all about. So it needs to be a slower process. You're not ever going to be as ripped as like a bodybuilder. You don't want to be that ripped. But I always say, for what we're doing, you want to be at a point where all it takes is one like prep and you could be on a stage for bodybuilding, or one prep and you can be on a platform competing. So you kind of want to be in that range where it's like, I'm pretty lean and I can go either direction if I wanted to. But there's just no real benefit to having all this extra fat on your body. But it comes from people. Yeah, they're just lazy. It's what it is. They're lazy.
So, and we can assume you take care on your nutrition.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, right now, I was definitely leaner like in the winter. And, you know, I put on a couple extra pounds. I'm trying to go up. I'm trying to deadlift 700. So if I'm a little bit bigger, a little bit leaner, or if I'm a little bit bigger, that's okay. I don't really care about competing anymore. So I'm not like trying to do it at a certain weight class. But yeah, I want to stay lean. Yeah, I want to look good. Everybody wants to look good. Do I need to be like insanely ripped? No, that's not really like, you know, necessarily a goal of mine. I would rather be athletic. But if you look at athletes, I mean, athletes are pretty lean. So a lot of this genetics, when you look at like super high levels, but everybody can be lean if you just diet the right way and just pay attention to it. But most importantly, it just makes me feel better. Like, I know that if I eat, let's say like the night before, like on Mondays we max. So if I eat like a big pizza on Sunday night, like physically I'll feel strong because I got so many extra calories. But mentally, I'm always a little bit foggy and I don't have that extra gear that you need to max for real, for real. So I just started eating better because it makes me feel better. And if you're an athlete doing performance stuff, like you have, like you want to fuel your body with food that your body wants. And it's just, it's hard. You know, I understand that. Like, I'm an emotional eater if I'm like super stressed out. And, you know, I tend to be like, fuck it. I just want to, if I'm super stressed out, what I tend to do is not eat. I skip a meal or two. And then it's towards the end of the day, I'm like, fuck, I'm so far behind on calories. I would rather have more calories than less calories. And I'll just eat some shit just to catch up on calories. And that's like something that I tricked myself into thinking is a justification. But I know I just need to be disciplined with it. And, you know, if you slip up every once in a while, that's fine. But a lot of times people just don't even care. It's definitely a stereotype. And a lot of times that's true stereotype. But I think in the future, that's, you're already seeing it now. But in the future, that's just how it's going to be. You know, people understand nutrition. They've got it figured out for powerlifting at this point. And it's just a matter of time till everybody does it. But you still have the old guard of people that are bigger and they're already super fucking strong. They're already at the top of the game. So they're going to remain there until like the next wave and next generation of athletes come through and really start looking a lot better. You're going to be seeing people smash world records in powerlifting because you're getting athletes. They're doing powerlifting now and it's just way more mainstream. So let's say you're like a football, it's way more mainstream for like high school athletes to be doing powerlifting type movements. So maybe you're a football player and you didn't have like the skills to make it to, you know, the NFL or something like that, but you're just a monster in the weight room. Like an easy like transition is just going to powerlifting. And you're going to start seeing more and more of that, but you're going to see it from other sports as well. And, you know, some of the smaller weight classes now, other sports are doing squats and deadlifts and bench pressing in the weight room in high school other than just football.
What's your favorite cheat meal?
My favorite cheat meal? Probably pizza, but I try to do sushi. That's a good, like, we have a place around here that does, like, you can order as much sushi as you want. Ooh. And if you can't, it's like a set price, like $25, but if you can't eat what you order, then you got to pay extra. So it's like, you can order as much as you want, but don't be like an asshole and order too much. So, I try to do that. We usually do that like once a week. And that's like the cheat meal where it's like, it's enough where you can just like smash, like you can just stuff your face and then you're like, oh, I ate way too much. And then you're like, all right, I need to get back on my diet. But it's food that's not so bad. It's just rice and fish. And, you know, it's not so bad for you where I feel like shit the next day, but it's enough to satisfy that, like, craving of I just need to eat a fuck ton of food right now. But with sushi is expensive, man. So to go out, if I were to go out to a normal sushi restaurant, that's if I get like four rolls or something, I mean, if they're $12 a piece, like that's a lot of money plus tip and maybe an appetizer and, you know, some soup or something like that, like the shit adds up. It's like next thing you know, I'm paying $60 for myself. It's like, dude, I can go out and get like a fat steak at like a nice steakhouse for that. So This is a good happy medium, $25, and you can just smash your face with food. But I like sushi.
Have you ever been to a Brazilian steakhouse?
No, I've heard about that. It was just crushing meat, but I should do that. I haven't been. Have you?
I love them. Like there is one a Texas to Brazil very near my house where the waiters know me. They don't know me by name, but they recognize me. They're like, bro, look at this guy's gonna smash everything.
So what do they come up to your table and then you can pick the meat, or do you order it and they bring it out from the kitchen?
That they are always like on rotation. They're always walking they don't give you a steak like that. They just give you like the crust.
Yeah
They cut it right in front of you, and they are always walking on rotation, showing you what they cut, and you are like, no, yeah, I want picanha, no, I want ribeye, I want this, I don't want that. There's also a really nice one. If you're ever in Mexico City, I will take you to those, and also I will take you to the best fucking tacos you will ever try.
All right, sounds good. That sounds good. I'll have to hit a steakhouse around here. So I live in St. Pete, Florida. And I don't think there's one of those Brazilian ones in St. Pete, but we're like 35 minutes from Tampa. And I know for sure there's a couple over there. So maybe I'll take the lady out this week and like, hey, I got a good idea. Let me take you on a date. taking this Brazilian. She'll probably love it too. She's a powerlifter. She's strong.
Bro, that shit, those steakhouses are worth every single penny.
Yeah, that's my kind of food, man. Like, I don't care. Like, I don't really go out to eat that much. But when I do, like, I want to be satisfied. And I don't really care that much about the money, but I hate paying a lot of money and not getting exactly what I want. So if it's like, if it's expensive, but it's like, dude, you can eat as much as you want. I don't care. I'll drop the money, no problem. Because I know I'll get exactly what I want out of that meal versus going to like some super fine dining place where it's like crazy expensive and they give you like one little piece on this huge plate. It's like, bro, I'm hungry, man. Like, I could eat a lot. So
yeah, that sucks. Sometimes there's some very fancy places where if I'm going out to eat to somewhere fancy or something like that, instead of reading what the steak is, I would instead read how many ounces of it is.
Let me get that. Yeah, for sure. So one of these days I'll have to come back on, and in the meantime I'll talk to you and I'll like think of some specific ideas for fighters that you guys can do for like strength training type of stuff. I'll put together like a little plan that like, here's some specifics, here's some like little ideas that I thought of. And I think that'd be probably pretty helpful for the people that are listening, if they're predominantly martial arts people.
Bro, that would be amazing. Also, right, you said that you like pizza. Does pineapple belong on pizza?
100% no, man. 100% no. So I'm from New Jersey, born and raised, man. So like pizza is big time in New York, New Jersey, Philly, that whole Northeast area. And I mean, there's people that like it, but if you talk to like traditional, like Italian people, like a lot of places don't even offer it. And a lot of places that do are like they don't like the real hardcore Italian guys are not into that. And I agree. It's just not, it's not my thing. I never liked it. I really, really don't like it. And I don't know. If you want to get pineapple on your pizza, you do you, man. But I think it's disgusting.
It's weird. All fighters that I have interviewed say it does belong on pizza, and bodybuilders and powerlifters always say it doesn't.
Really? That's weird. I wonder why that is.
Brain damage, bro. Brain damage.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Now, this is a very weird but standard question for the podcast. How many midgets can you take on a fight?
Are they like all at once or one at a time?
Dealer's choice.
All right. Well, I would definitely go one at a time for sure. I think that's obviously easier. Do I get any like weapons, like a bat or just bare hands?
No. Bare hands.
Bare hands, and they're bare hands too.
Yeah.
Oh man! All right, let's see. Let me think about this.
Okay, so, let me make that more specific. It's one at a time, but every 30 seconds there's another midget coming out. It's like the Royal Rumble.
Yeah. Okay, Royal That's Rumble of midgets.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know, man. I think that I could easily knock out a midget. But I think I'm trying to think of how long it would take me to get tired. I could easily knock out a midget in under 30 seconds. But I think that I would probably, my conditioning would start to catch up to me. But I think realistically, but at the same time, like, I don't know how much damage this is how I think of things. How much damage can I inflict on them? And how much damage can they inflict on me? I think the damage that I can inflict on them will get lower and lower over time as I get tired, but I don't think that they can do a ton of damage to me unless they like kick me in the balls or something.
They can bite you in the balls.
Yeah, or if they like tackle me on the ground, like they would have to get me on the ground. They would have to beat me with like a ground and pound, I would imagine. But I don't know. I think I could take 20 midgets. I think I could get through 10. So that's 5 minutes. I think I could get through 5 minutes with a pretty good head of steam, and then I'll really start to slow down. I think it would take me a while. I think 20 I could do. Yeah, I think I could do 20. And then from there, I can't guarantee anything.
Okay. Now, that's...
How many can you tell me? Because you've thought about this before. So how many... What's like a reasonable answer?
Look, I've never fought a midget, but I fought really short guys during my lifetime, okay? Yeah. I live in Mexico, so being 6'6", it's like being 7'2" on the U.S.
All right.
And I usually end up sparring guys who are like 5'5", something like that. And I've accidentally knocked out guys who are 5'7". And I think, okay, if I can knock out those guys sometimes even accidentally. Now, it depends on the midget, you know. It can be a very athletic midget. It can be a crackhead midget, which would be fucking scary.
Yeah.
Now, I don't remember how... I think, like, I could go through 40 of them, I think. Like, they are knee height. So, I would just...
Yeah, you could be... So, can you do anything? Like, can you, like, snap their neck? Or is it got to be, like, punching and kicking and elbows?
No. These are no rules, bro.
Just free-for-all? Okay. Yeah, I could definitely snap some necks. But, yeah, I think 20. I think 20, I would start to really be in trouble.
Okay. What would be your plan of attack? Because I've heard guys who think, like, okay, knock the first one out, and then I grab him and I use them as a bat.
I think that would take too much energy to do that. I think you could probably, I mean, I don't know, man. Maybe midgets are harder to knock out than I think, because they're definitely a little thicker in the neck, you know? So I don't know. I think I would probably either just like kick, knee, or punch, just like drop a bomb on the first one. And I would try to knock them out as soon as possible, so you have as much rest time before the next one. But I think I could easily kick one and then maybe just get on their back and snap their neck or something. I think that could be a good strategy for a little while. But I think once you have to do it as soon as possible, because once they start adding up, that's when you're going to get in trouble. But yeah, I think you just got to drop a bomb on the first one. But that takes a lot of energy too. Or maybe choking them out will probably take less time and less energy. But I guess your arms will probably get tired from that. I don't know, man. I would have to really think about it. So you would have to really utilize all your tools. Like, you would have to kick, knee, punch, elbow, and choke. Because if you just did one thing, like, then you're going to get tired. So you have to have be able to use like your knees and legs when your arms, to give your arms a break. But maybe just like kicking one in the face, first one out of the gates, just kicking them might be the way to go.
You need to be brutal with the first one, because you need to get them scared, you know? You want them not to go. If you need to jab out the other guy, the midget, and figure out how he fights before, you need to basically murder that guy, you know? You need to be brutal as fuck.
For sure. Yeah, you need to send a message, set the tone, so the other ones are a little bit more cautious when they're coming in. Cool. All right, man. Appreciate you having me. And like I said, we'll have to get up again sometime. I'll put my mind into something a little specific for the type of people that are listening. And I think we could do something pretty cool like that.
Okay. One last question.
Sure.
How can I get a beautiful beard like yours?
I don't know, man. It just kind of happened one day. So I just started growing it. But for real though, when I was growing it, now I just kind of maintain it. When I was growing the first place, I used a lot of like beard oils and stuff like that. And I think that really does help make it grow faster. So get some beard oils. It helps. Brush it. You got to get a brush. Yeah, it's a lot of work. People don't understand that. To keep it looking nice, it's a fine line between looking nice and looking like a straight up hobo. So you gotta trim it. You got to brush it and put the oils in it. But when you do, it looks nice. But yeah, I think the oils and stuff really helps it grow in the beginning. And maybe it's to keep it going, but I don't want it super long. I just got trimmed the other day, so it's a little bit shorter now, but I want it to be clean looking, and basically as long as I can while it still looks clean. Sometimes it gets a little like, all right, bro, you need to You trim this up. You're looking like a homeless person.
It's like a hair on the head. You need to trim it. You need to take care of it.
For sure. I used to have long hair. Fun fact. So I grew up on the beach in New Jersey, and everyone had long hair. Now I'm bald, but I had long blonde hair. I was a lifeguard on the beach for 8 years, surfer bra growing up. So that's a fun fact about me that most people, when I show them a picture of me when I was younger, clean shaven, long blonde hair, I'd be like, who the fuck is this guy? I'm like, yeah, that's me.
Okay, that was amazing. Now, I think we should wrap this one up. Do you have anything else you want to say to the audience?
Well, I'll say just generally speaking, man, when it comes to being successful at anything that you want to do, you got to stay disciplined. And the way, like, your motivation is going to go up and down over time. It doesn't matter who you are. You could be, you know, a world-class athlete, or you could be on day one. Motivation is never going to, it's never going to get you to the end goal. Discipline is going to get you to the end goal. And what keeps you disciplined is, I say this to everybody, you have to have a very clear and defined, write it down, reason why you're doing this. So we call it a why statement. Why the fuck am I getting up early? Why am I going and getting beat up every day? Why am I doing this? And think about that. Take some time to really think about it. Write it down. And when you're not feeling the motivation, you can write them on index cards. You can put them in your bathroom. You can put them in your car. Put them wherever it is that you see on a regular basis. And on the days that you're just not feeling it, just read that. And then you'd be like, oh, fuck. All right. I guess. And that's really helped me a lot. It's really helped a lot of people that I've worked with, is getting through those times when the motivation's down, is why am I doing this, man? And it's got to be a bigger reason than it's got. The reason's got to be bigger than wanting to take the extra 20 minutes of sleep or an extra hour of sleep, whatever. So write yourself down and do the little things, man, like showing up to the gym every single day. Like, that's the easy part. If you're trying to be like a professional, or if you're trying to be really high level in anything that you do, show up to the gym every day. That's what everybody does. All right. You need to do the little things outside of the gym. Take care of yourself, do the stretching, do the meditating, do the breathing exercises, eat right. And really take it as like, this is what I do all day, every day, and or do as much as I possibly can. And when you do something, when you go down that road of self-mastery and discipline, it's just going to pay off so much, man. Like, when you learn how to control yourself and you learn how to overcome things, you can apply that to any situation in your entire life, right? Hey, all right, I want to do martial arts. Cool. I came successful in that. Great. Now that that's over, cool. Now I want to build a business, but now I have all the tools that took me all this whole long time to learn by growing up in the sport. Now I have all those tools. I can do the same exact thing and build a business. I can do the same exact thing and build a relationship. I can do the same exact thing. And it just gives you all these tools. And it's just so much more worth it to really discipline yourself and learn how to control yourself than doing dumb shit. And I know, especially when I was younger, you know, younger people in general, the motivation to go out and do dumb shit, party with your friends and girls and stuff like that, like, I get it. But you're just going to be so much happier with yourself if you stay disciplined and committed to something that you truly love to do. And the biggest way to do that, to pull you out of those downtimes, is have a why statement, have it written down and put it around your house where it just can ride you out of those downtimes. So that's what I would say. Why the fuck am I doing this? You know, that question will come through your mind at some point in time, and you need to have that answered ahead of time.
Thank you very much. It was an amazing answer. That was an amazing goodbye.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Take care, my man.
Thanks.